moment. Okay, we are live. I have to wait
Wonderful.
For the green button. So I am really excited today for our Shakti Rise Immersion ongoing interviews. I have invited a special friend onto our call today, Rensselaer. Rensselaer, are you there?
I am. Hi, Jeannie.
Yay.
Thanks for having me.
I am just so delighted to have you. And I was thinking back, like I first met you, I think, through yoga classes.
Yes, I think it was at a formerly known as Anusara event.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, years ago. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so great. The yoga world has connected me to so many beautiful people like yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So Rensselaer, as I know her, Resh, mm-hmm. is a somatic sex educator, erotic intelligence and intimacy guide, and meditation instructor. She works with individuals, couples, and communities in experiential and hands-on ways to discover the wisdom and power of the body and the innate generative energy that has come alive and fully show up, not only in sex, but in our whole lives. Her depth and breadth of experience and skills allows her to serve as guide and muse for people from various walks of life. Rensselaer has a unique mixture of traditional and non-traditional experience that spans 20 years and includes coaching, teaching, information systems, engineering, and healthcare consulting. She holds a master's degree from American University and George Washington University and has lived overseas for several years of her life, learning and absorbing other cultures, ways of being, and languages. Rensselaer is trained in somatic sex education through the Institute of Advanced Studies and Human Sexuality and is a certified sexological body worker. She is also trained in the Somatica method through Celeste and Danielle and holds a certification as a circling facilitator from the Integral Center. She is a registered yoga teacher and integrative restoration level 2 teacher and facilitator. She is also co-founder and leader instructor for the Magnificent Lover Course and the Women's Temple Collective. She also maintains a private practice in Boulder, Colorado, offering erotic intelligence and intimacy guidance, the pleasure practice. She is devotionally committed to discovering and serving the world through creating more aliveness and awareness in herself and with others. Wow! That is quite
Thank
a bio.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yes,
I don't think I've ever read a bio quite like yours.
Yeah.
So I was telling you in an earlier conversation that this spring we've been diving into this goddess. Her full name is Lalita Tripura Sundari. She's got quite a name. And her
wow.
name really means the charming beauty of the three cities. And she is like...
Wow.
She is like the embodiment of Kundalini. She is like, if there was anywhere we were going in evolution, it would be in the direction of Lalita, because she is the full empowerment of beauty and eroticism, not only from the outside, but from the inside to the outside, or outside to the inside, however you want to see that. So, you know, to me that means like she's fully awakened. She's fully awakened Kundalini. And that moves out into her gestures, her speech, the way she dresses, the way she speaks, the way she might make a meal, the way she eats a meal, the way she, you know, cuts her food. I mean, it's like everything she does has this sort of exquisiteness about her. She's
wow.
You can find her in the ocean. She's readily in our oceans. I can't remember if I said this to you the other day, but during my meditation retreat that I co-host with my sister every year, our last day we always plunge into the ocean. It's all women. We don't invite the guys. We just grab the women, we go down, we strip down, and we just plunge into the ocean. And usually we're down there at a full moon. So the full moon is giving way to the sun rising, and there we are in the ocean just, you know, floating along, laughing together. And I tell you, it's one of the most sensual things I do. It's just,
yeah,
that last day of retreat is just, it's so exquisite. And that's a real example of Lalita. She's like, she's like Napa Valley in California. She's Tuscany hillsides. I think of her as like the Pompeo in Florence, just to give you a little idea of who she is. She's warm, moist, fertile places. So she's the moisture lovemaking.
Just vitally alive, it sounds like.
She's, you know, like, I love this in the summer when I sit on my porch under the moon's light and I have like a glass of wine with my husband. It's it's that kind of exquisiteness that she will take the time for and create, you know, beautiful conversation, has a little sort of eroticism definitely to her. But it's merged with an inner autonomy. They do they describe her as queenly, that she knows herself so well that she's not a type of woman that is going to get thrown off by another woman or be jealous of another woman or try to be something other than who she really is.
Oh, I love it.
In lieu of your work,
you've just given me a new goddess to explore, and maybe she needs to sit on our women's temple altar, because what I hear you describing is really what we call erotic intelligence, that innate intelligence that lives within us that's really guided by Eros or the generativity. It's not just about sex or sensuality, but how do we come alive? And from a place of, I like to use the word sovereignty, but you said autonomy, of where am I sovereign and I really know my rightness of being, my right place, no matter what is happening out in the world. So I love your invitation to learn about this goddess with you. I'm so excited.
Well, I'm really excited to share her too with you, because I know I have so much to learn from you as well. One of the great things is that in meditation practice, we can actually install the goddess into the subtle body through mantra. So her mantra is Hrim, H-R-I-I-M. It's pronounced H-R-E-E-M, Hrim. And particularly if you have a daily meditation practice and you're working on this, you know, inner awakening of what we would call Kundalini Shakti, which is highly erotic and highly sensual, When we install Lalita, we use this Bij mantra, Hrim. And so in these courses that I do, we actively work on installing the goddess. It's not just this concept of, oh, yeah, she's way out there in California, Napa Valley. It's like, no, she is you. She is that incredible vibratory, pulsing, literally orgasmic wave in you.
Beautiful.
So, you know, my question to you is, there's so many I have, but I love the way that you just described. I mean, I think we're just saying the same thing in our own languaging. And I think that what I notice in students, and certainly in myself through my years of yoga practice, is that when I came to yoga, I was 27 years old. I was definitely sexual at that time, but I would say I was inhibited. And I can look back and kind of see that in myself. And I think some of this came from a Presbyterian / Methodist background. My parents, we never talked about sex. We never talked about my menstrual period. It was very like under the cover. You know, I had three sisters, so I ran to them. But I had to figure a lot out on my own. I mean, even, you know, self-pleasuring, you know, that I felt like shame around that at times. You know, like, oh, my God, is this normal? And, you know, you know, I went into my own investigation, and then through yoga asana, I was starting to feel like, wow, I really feel more freedom, especially when I started to work my pelvic floor opening and my letting my breath really penetrate the pelvic floor and feeling into those deep, deep places of eroticism inside myself. And then understanding that it was quite natural. So, you know, I know that many women feel inhibited. They don't feel, they don't even know how to find their sexuality. And I know that a large part of your work is really assisting people. So I'd love for you to tell us a bit more about how do you work with inhibition. And, you know, a lot of the reasons that I'm studying meditation, which is just so funny because I don't think people think of meditation as erotic, but it's incredibly, incredibly erotic for me. And it's incredibly awakening because it really is about, it's about voicing and it's about creativity, not just sexual or sexual intercourse. It's about Lalita. Mm-hmm. It's about meeting the world through my senses. Meeting nature in this sensual way, and part of that is moving through inhibition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that question, Jeannie. And what you're speaking to is such a common experience for most of us in Western culture, and by all means, women. The experience of feeling like sex is in this little box over here, and I do it in these very particular ways and in these very particular places, and you know, it's really limited to very specific things usually. And what I hear you speaking to about Lalita is really she's everywhere, the connection with the world. So how can we so I really support people both in, you know, finding what we tend to think of as more traditionally sexual, what more do you want to have in your sexuality? But also, how do you want to be showing up in the world? How do you want to be meeting yourself? So how can you expand your sense of what is vitality? What has you come alive? Yes, your meditation practice, absolutely. Finding out more of what's living in you and places where you have stories running or conditioning. You spoke about, you know, being raised in a particular particular background. That's quite common as well, as many people grow up never talking about sex. And so it's this thing that we keep over here. But sex or Eros or Lalita, you know, the energy of Lalita is actually the reason that everything is here. Eros is bringing chaos into form. So when we expand our definition of sex and really take it to, I like to use the term erotic intelligence, what is intelligently living in my body, in my mind, in my spirit, in my energetic body that can guide me to have a bigger experience of myself and the world? It might involve my genitals, it might not, but how can I really awaken to what's mine to have as a, you know, in this human body and really engage in the world in a fully enlivened, awakened way? So
when you work with people, it's probably really dependent. I would think that almost on the verge of, you know, real psychotherapy in some ways. You know, I mean, I did do therapy early on, but I tell you, I think because I'm so kinesthetic that a lot of the opening has come through a somatic process like yoga for me. And now...
Yes.
Yeah, I've just been so surprised at meditation. People think, well, I'm just going to calm my mind. But actually, when you evoke a kundalini inside you, it is very much whole body, you know, evoking. And, you know, I'm starting to understand, like, what Rumi and you know, Hafiz and these great poets were talking about when they said that we make love with the divine. And, and the divine's making love to us. Now that could be through a meditation practice, but it could also be the way in which we're in nature. You know, that's another way that I come into like a full expression of myself is when I'm in nature. And I know that your practices get much more intimate in how you help people. I don't. Would you care to go into some of that?
Like, yes.
How do you help? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what kind of? I think the other thing that might be really revealing. I think the more we name it, this is the thing I've come to understand is like, when we name the vulnerability, it just gives permission for others to go, oh, I'm not alone, and wow, feel this inhibition. Wow, maybe someone else is feeling that too, and I can actually get help around this.
Yes. Yeah, thank you for bringing that in, because this is very vulnerable work. This is, you know, working with our sexuality or our generative energy is very vulnerable. And you're right. There's definitely a psychological aspect to the work. And I don't call my work therapy, and I often work with, in conjunction with therapists, because I do a lot of somatic and hands-on work that therapists either aren't trained to do or they can't actually touch their clients. So really I'm working in the realm of intimacy, and for me that's both emotional and physical intimacy. And so in addition to working with the body, I'm also working with the nervous system. So one of the first things that I have that I work with people on, which is why my yoga and meditation background is so helpful here, is really bringing in more mindfulness to what is happening in the internal landscape. You know, am I running a bunch of thoughts? And am I really so overstimulated and jacked up that, you know, I can't even be present in my body? So really noticing regulation, nervous system regulation. So I do that in a lot of the ways that I'm sure you do that with your students, is through breath work and meditation and mindfulness practices. And when we can really start to drop in and be more embodied, then we can start to learn more about what is living in the body. And so then we might start to do specific body work practices. So that might look like really, you know, gradually progressing to these places, because so much of us have histories, conditioning, and even trauma stored in our bodies around our sex. So really progressively working towards the direction of, okay, how can I be physically present in my body more and more? And when it's the right time and it's of service, then actually doing some genital contact. So that could look like, for the first time in someone's life, just being held. There's a practice called cupping where, and this is a beautiful thing to do for yourself as well, or for your partner. And you can do this for any gender or partner, where you just take your hand and place it on either your own genitals or your partner's genitals. So you're kind of cupping your or the person's genitals, and you might place another hand on their heart and just really inviting them into a down-regulating, easeful, deep, smooth breath. And often for women, this is also true for men, but often for women, just to be held in that way and to have that amount of presence and attention and witness to just find out what's living in this body. You spoke about pelvic floor work, you know, just bringing the attention to the pelvis and to the generative vortex of the body is profoundly healing, can be a real source of releasing trauma, releasing grief, just to be held and be attended to in that way. So there's a variety of practices that I use depending on where people are and what they're wanting to explore, whether it is, you know, sort of what you mentioned of
removing some of the inhibitions or blockages or how we think about our sex or, you know, who we are as sexual people, to actually finding out more about our anatomy of arousal. So really getting to explore, you know, what happens when I actually contact the legs of my clitoris. Yeah, your clitoris actually has legs. It's not just the glands. So actually getting a deeper, more comprehensive education about your anatomy, your sex, and everything that, you know, that comes with that. So the emotional, energetic aspects, you know, you spoke about Kundalini. So, you know, some people are having really large energetic experiences that they don't understand. So being able to be witnessed and held by someone who can actually help them navigate that is another area of the work that I do. So it's quite varied. It can be some people come in from a place of real dissatisfaction and challenge, and other people come in, you know, just with curiosity, like, I want to learn more about who I am as a sexual being and what is my body capable of. So there's quite a variety, and working with individuals and couples to even learn, you know, how to be with each other. That practice I gave of cupping is a super powerful practice to do with your partner, have your partner do with you, and not go into sex. So to be able to just make contact with your source of generativity and not expect an outcome is hugely potent.
Well, I see this, just even your work is so evolutionary. It's I was thinking back, you know, growing up in the way that I did, which was beautiful, and at the same time, there are parts of it that are, you know, with my own kids, I've really opened up conversation and just an opening, like, I am here, we're going to talk about this. I want this to be an open household where we're honest, and when those questions come up, we don't feel literally inhibited, because that just goes into your sex life and then into your how you parent. So, you know, that, but I see your work as highly evolutionary when I think about one principle that came up while you were speaking was this principle of what we call Shri in yoga, which is the goddess Lakshmi is another name for her, but it literally is this life-affirming beach mantra, Shreem. It means that we keep radically affirming the ever-evolving part of ourselves. And, you know, one of my teachers describes it as orgasm. Like, there is just more and more and more of ourselves to discover. And I think that you are bringing women and men into the vulnerability of intimacy, as you say, the generative power sources. If we don't have a comfort level with our genitals and being able to self-pleasure and to know ourselves that deeply, I really believe that that's part of our own frustration, our own dis-ease, our own inability to actually manifest healthy manifestation of who we're really meant to be in this lifetime, what we're really meant to share. I see that all as connected, and that's, again, Lalita's powers, that she connects her pelvic floor to her crown. And, you know, that would be the passage of Kundalini, not just in the vertical direction of earth and sky, but actually also in the feminine plane of the horizontal, which is, you know, which is, like, when you slice through your body, it's the width of the body, not just the vertical. So the vertical and the horizontal are really meeting. But to me, it seems like, you know, the I think a lot about in these interviews, like, wow, we are really moving forward. And I would say that your work is highly evolutionary, which is, you know, brava.
Yeah, it's thank you.
Time.
Yeah.
It's totally.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know,
I feel,
Yeah, go ahead.
I feel so blessed to be able to do this work and to hold people in the way that I do. And, you know, you spoke to vulnerability. This is extremely vulnerable, edgy work. And, you know, I feel grateful for the souls who are showing up to really do this work, because this is pretty advanced work. And, you know, I'm working with people who have already done quite a bit of therapy or self-inquiry and are sort of on track with something here and are finding, you know, okay, I want a more embodied version of knowing myself. I'm really blessed to be able to do this work with people.
Well, it's really interesting because you talked about Eros in the beginning, and you know, one of mm-hmm. Lalita's embodiments is desire or kama. And mm-hmm. so, you know, Sally Kempton describes her as like the first seed of life. And that this concept of desire, of longing, of you know, a longing for connection, for intimacy, mm-hmm. you know, for relationship, you know, however yeah. we want to call that. And it seems as if, now I'm not suggesting that sexual intercourse is the only way. Again, like Lalita is really, mm-hmm. but she's so in tune with her pelvic floor that the energy can rise and move through her in her actions and speech in the world. That's what makes her so fully awakened. And I think that's an interesting concept to think about, that understanding our sexuality and our sensuality and having that relationship to intimacy, where we're working on ourselves on this kind of vulnerability, that this is part of an awakened process that human beings, I think, are being asked to come to. And you know, I would go as far as to say that women have a leading edge on this right now in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and
I'm like, wow, women are really being asked to step up right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Definitely,
and you know, there's what you were just speaking to a moment ago of desire and longing and relationship. I think you're right. It's not necessarily about intercourse or even solo sex or self-pleasure, but really awakening yourself to access more of that desire and longing, because that's, I don't think sex is the only portal, but I think it's one of the strongest portals to the soul. And so when we really get in touch with that energy, the kundalini, the generative energy, we get into access more of our desire and actually what we're here to do on the planet. And so when we awaken ourselves even more, we get to show up more fully in the world and bring ourselves more fully. And I think that, you know, I do see a lot of women leading the way there. You know, I really love learning about this goddess Lalita, because she sounds sort of like a version of Eros, you know, the god who creates form from chaos. And I like to use the word erotic intelligence that I mentioned a while ago. What, you know, that innate intelligence, that energy that moves in us to create form, whether it's a baby or art or our gift or the way we parent or the way we, you know, serve people. But it's really that I would say it's a pretty feminine energy, because it's creation, it's creating form. It doesn't mean that men don't have it also. They do. We could say that it is a feminine energy, that force of death, rebirth, of creation, creativity, you know, creating something out of chaos.
Yeah, and we would say, you know, the yogic terms, like chaos really is Kali's domain, and Lalita is taking it into form, into a refined form. I have a really cool quote here that I think you might enjoy from Sally Kempton's book called Awakening Shakti on Eros and Eros' connection to Lalita. So she says that desire, comma, is always the first seed of life. The Greek concept of Eros comes closer in Western language to describing what the force of desire means in the Indian spiritual tradition. Though in our time, we have relegated Eros to the sexual. In fact, it is something much wider and vaster. Eros is the driving force of life itself, and the erotic is that quality in reality that makes it lively, juicy, and alluring. Cosmic desire brings the universe into being, and the world is, in one sense, an outflowing of the cosmic erotic impulse. Lalita personifies desire in all its forms, starting with the cosmic desire that impels the formless unborn to explode into forms. In this holographic universe that the tantricas celebrate, that wave of desire is expressed through the entire visible and invisible world. Lalita is the cosmic force that Brian Swim calls allurement, the same force that draws atoms together into molecules, also manifests as the attractive scent that flowers send forth to attract bees, and as the inner heart and the moistness of human sexuality. And she ends this paragraph, as a spiritual principle, Lalita Shakti channels mundane desires into active spiritual aspiration.
Beautiful.
Isn't
that beautiful? Yeah, I agree with everything you just said.
Yeah, so sometimes when I think about even where I started my yoga practice was in my, especially in my tantric studies in Anasara, was in this place of the Icha Shakti of like, what do you long for? What do you desire? What is it that you really want? And sometimes I would be like, well, I'm not sure what I want. You know, now that I'm getting older and I'm having these very strong experiences of Shakti, I feel like it's less about my personality. It's more about this energy that's moving through me that if we can connect to it, it so opens our lives to trust, to the juiciness, as she says, the allurement of life, the joy, the freedom. I'm tempted to kind of shift gears, not just a little bit here, because I think that part of Lalita's great teachings is that she literally is asking us to take, there's a quote about her that I love, and that is loving that darkness into light, loving the darkness into light. And I think sometimes it's good to name some of the ways in which maybe our culture has gone into a shadow aspect of her, where the first things that, of course, come to my mind are like this crazy thing with pornography. You know, I have a son that's 20 and a daughter that's almost 16, and you know, that I just want them to be in healthy, loving situations where they don't feel that they have to turn towards porn. And I'm sure there's aspects of porn that can probably help us. Maybe you can help us with that. But I also know that I have friends, especially male friends, that are really struggling in relationships, and they turn to porn, you know, pretty readily. I wonder about, you know, what is it that's missing in that intimate connection? And maybe you can help us out with that, the shadow aspects.
Yeah, I'm so glad that you pointed us here. I was also kind of turning towards in this direction, because you know, when we do look at desire and how we relate to desire in our culture, it's pretty immature. And I'm not using that word as a judgmental word, but just how we relate to how we get our needs and wants met. Can we get them met? So really, finding out what is hidden there and what's going on there is a huge piece of doing our work as yogis, as people who are on a path of spirituality, of waking up. So if the shadow is really at play here, especially with sex. And you know, we can also speak to the sinister aspect of shadow, or the more dark, but there's also golden shadow of how we, you know, oh, I'm not that person. I'm not, you know, that erotically enlivened person. So there are both sides to that. Or I'm not a powerful woman. You know, no, that's not me. So shadow is a big area to explore with this work, and one that I work with quite a lot of clients. And you spoke specifically to pornography. And it is an epidemic in our culture, the way that people are very unconsciously using porn. And I don't have judgments about porn per se. I think there's very little good porn that exists, because so much of it represents a very particular type of sex, bodies that aren't, you know, average, normal bodies. So you're right. A lot of our youth, I have a few young male clients who have come to me with big issues around porn, because this is, you know, this is kind of how they got their sex education and their first initiations into sex. And they've really created some addictive patterns for themselves. So it's really unfortunate that porn has such a limited representation, and often inauthentic, you know, coming back to that word vulnerable. You know, very few porn scenes reveal truly vulnerable sex. So we see, you know, a lot of women being objectified and even harmed in porn. A lot of women have even altered their bodies, even their genitals. Some porn stars will get labiaplasty so that they look more like a Barbie, basically. And wow. Then, you know, our youth see these bodies and this type of sex, and they think that, you know, this is what sex is supposed to be. And then they take that into their relationships, and you know, young girls think that they're not supposed to ask for what they want or speak up. So it is causing a lot of harm. And I think, you know, what parents can do, like you said, is just be really open and really speak about this. And, you know, when your kids are the right age, just, you know, let them know that there are many other ways to explore their sex, even in healthy ways on their own, but without, you know, the trappings of porn. So yeah. it is unfortunate. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. What is your feeling on why? Is this also showing us our lack of intimacy and knowing what intimacy really is and how to be in relationship? Mm-hmm. You know, I question this a lot, although I have an incredible sex and love life with my husband of 22 years. I feel so fortunate mm-hmm. that it just keeps growing and expanding mm-hmm. and evolving. But I have a lot of friends that discuss things with me, and I have, you know, really wondered how, as a yoga instructor, can I help to keep opening? I mean, I think the yoga does it on its own, but, you know, how do we keep helping our culture evolve to a place of this exquisite understanding of the intimacy that can be had? I think that's, you know, to live a life not recognizing, you know, what, you know, foreplay really is, and the exquisiteness of taking time, and I know as a woman, it's mm-hmm. like it just keeps getting better. But if it's rushed, like you can imagine on a porn, in a porn pornography mm-hmm. situation, it's not very fulfilling.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, what scientists are learning more and more about addiction or the nature of addiction is isolation. People being really isolated in their lives, and, you know, not feeling like they have connections. So, yes, you use the word relationship and intimacy. So how can we expand our awareness and capacity for relationship and intimacy, you know, so that that doesn't just mean sexual intimacy and, you know, your one partner, or if you're not partnered, you're just yourself, but how are you connecting with the world? How are you engaging with the world? Are you letting yourself really be curious? Really, you know, we spoke early on about often people are taught, you know, I like to kind of show this square when I'm holding my fingers together, like sex lives in this tiny square, and that's all it is. So how can we expand our capacity to relate with the world intimately, whether it's out on a hike in nature and seeing the most gorgeous sunrise and just falling in love and finding more connection through all sorts of relationships, including our relationship with ourselves. So, yeah, really opening ourselves to being vulnerable. And, you know, that includes with self. You know, how can I be vulnerable with myself and find out, you know, what's fully living in me. I don't think we can ever find out the full extent. You know, you spoke about this just being an exponential practice of continuing to discover. We're such complex beings. So really, I would say, you know, practices like yoga and meditation and other embodied practices and finding community, people, you know, like your students talking to you. This is part of how we bring shadow into the light is, you know, when we keep it over there and we don't talk about it, that's how it thrives and keeps living. So finding...
That makes a lot of sense when you talked about isolation, really. How do we keep, you know, I think we're at a time, we know this, that, you know, many people would say the dawning of the light on the planet is happening right now. It's the way my meditation teacher expresses that. Other teachers of mine would say that it's the dawning of the feminine, that there's a rise of the feminine at this time. And one of the aspects of that is that even the lone teacher is no longer, you know, valid in some ways. That that even though, like, I have a major meditation teacher, he's a master, he's been doing this for 40 years, I look to him definitely as teacher, and yet he's empowering all of us to go on and learn initiation and things that, you know, in the past would never have been just given out to, I mean, dedicated students. It would be passed to one person. And that isn't working anymore. It's we have to accelerate this process of awakening. And I really think that your work is part of that process of awakening. It's a spiritual awakening as well as a physical awakening. And the rise of feminine consciousness really is, I do believe, I'm going to be pretty bold in saying this, but I do believe this is about women embracing their sensual and sexual selves, whatever that means to them. Learning to trust in, as you said, the area of the lower chakras. We know that when we can free up energy, particularly at the Muladhara chakra, you know, right down in and up through the genitals there, that empowerment literally is a cosmic energy when it's generated, and it's vibrational. And when that vibration begins to move, it literally moves like an orgasm. It moves like a wave inside. And that is generative. It wants to become something in the world. It wants to manifest. It wants to be creative. Mm-hmm. And so I see that, you know, we really are at an incredible time in history where women can claim this empowerment for themselves. And, you know, I don't know how you see that, but that's sort of how I've been feeling into myself and my own evolution. Mm-hmm. And then when I look to the work that you're doing, I'm like, wow, like, this mm-hmm. is like really intimate, you know, one-to-one or in partnership work around, you know, really coming into feeling, comfortable is not really the right word, but really empowered. It's an empowerment.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we, you know, we were using the words autonomy and sovereignty, and this is a big practice that I teach in my work is sovereignty. So how can I really know my place in the world, my rightness of being? Really, it's, you know, we can use the word confidence, the word, you know, self-knowledge, but really trust that I, just like everyone else, has some unique offering to make the world. And so, you know, to be sovereign is to be sovereign over something. So what is that something that you're sovereign over? That's your unique medicine, your unique offering that you have to bring to this world who so desperately needs it. So we are in this time of transformation, and the world desperately needs it. So the more and more we can step into our power, the more we can become a whole and healthy contributor to the planet and to all of the challenges that we face. So, yes, stepping into our power is not only, you know, like something that's nice to do, it's our responsibility.
Yes, yes. Yeah, mm-hmm. And I don't know that we always link our sensuality and even our sexuality to empowerment. And just mm-hmm. to quote Sally Kempton again, she just has so many incredible ways of expressing this, but she says, the Lolita woman, mm-hmm. she says, can you step into a radical state of empowerment? Can you allow mm-hmm. yourself to be that abundant, that loving, and that strong? Can mm-hmm. you take that much pleasure in yourself and in your life? That's just sort of the crux of, like, becoming a Lolita woman is
mm-hmm.
you know, a radical state of empowerment. And that is, that means, you know, stepping into your abundance, your fully loving, erotic, and sensual self, your strength, mm-hmm. your vulnerability. It's all of it.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, we're being asked to really integrate, I think, today. It's super exciting to me to have this kind of conversation, even, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. you know, that's where my work has gone, which is, you know, it's not just on the yoga floor. It's actually into having these kinds of conversations on all kinds of level from this conversation with you mm-hmm. around, you know, really sexuality and sensuality and embracing that to, all the way to like our finances and to, our creativity, yeah. And there's so many ways that this manifests. But this is, we're talking about a primal power here.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, very potent force that we all need to be in touch with. And as we mentioned earlier, it can definitely live in the shadow. So how can we really embrace it in a whole, conscious, healthy way to bring forward our gifts? And I mean, this, when you start to really step into your power, it bleeds into everything in your life, how you're showing up in your work, how you're showing up in your family, your relationships, your community. So it's a very important path, I believe.
Yeah, and I think when we really part of that sovereignty or that autonomy, as I was saying, you know, is really, it's not afraid of really owning that inside ourselves. And then
mm-hmm.
I think when we really own that sovereignty within, then we're not so afraid of, like, giving it away or, you know, whether that's in partnership with a man or a woman or with your girlfriends. Mm-hmm. You're not afraid of actually someone taking something from you, or we start to really have this, that autonomy really allows for, I think, true relationship to occur.
Yeah.
And it does take some maturity, I believe. And when the world is made more of this, I think we're going to have a lot of incredible dynamic creativity mm-hmm. on the planet.
Yes.
So I'm looking at our time, and I can't believe it. We really have a lot to talk about. And
yeah.
I would love for everyone to know about how to find you and about your Women's Temple. And, you know, if you can just sort of sum that up in a few minutes here of just, you know, what you're doing and how people can, I know that they can find you privately, and then also
mm-hmm.
Just give them ways in which they can find you for more in-depth work and more exploration.
Yeah, thank you for that invitation. So my website, thepleasurepractice.com, or it's Women's Temple Collective. I might give you these to post on the page where you post this. But I do work with people one-on-one, both virtually and in person. In person is more effective because I do a lot of somatic work. But I do work with people virtually as well. And then I work with groups, both groups of men and women. And one of the most powerful co-creations that I've been blessed to be a part of in the last 2 years with my teaching partner, Christiane Pelmus, is called the Women's Temple Collective. And we're now in round two of that. And it's an intimate arts practice group just for women. And then we have women who range in age from 29 to 77. We have a great grandmother in our temple who is just vibrant and alive and so an intimate arts practice group. So what that means is that we are exploring both emotional and physical intimacy, and we are holding the hypothesis that women are voracious creatures. We need a lot of nourishment. We need a lot of touch. We need a lot of contact. We don't even know, you know, what the end, you know, amount is. But we just keep exploring here and finding out that the more and more we can show up together and practice both radical truth telling. So we do practices, mindfulness practices, mythopoetic storytelling and forms of counsel where we get to really get in touch with, you know, what is the story of my girl and where does she come from and what is my soul up to and, you know, who is the woman of me? And you spoke about power. We work with that quite a bit. And then we also work in the physical intimacy realm. So all of the really deep sex education that none of us got as girls, really learning the full extent of our anatomy of arousal. And we do this both with hands-on work as well as, books and diagrams. But we do sexological body work together. So what that looks like is really getting an opportunity to be on a massage table with your sisters while you get to go really slow and find out, you know, okay, well, where are the legs of my clitoris and where's my A spot? Where's my G spot? And, you know, what is living in this body? And when you get to do that with your sisters and not have to perform and not have to, you know, worry about annoying your partner, you just get so much more freedom. Shame and trauma get released. It's a really powerful group, and women's lives are altered forever going through this work.
I can only imagine that is so true.
Yeah.
We get to open that pelvic floor and the areas that of holding and inhibition and all that stuff that we hold, and you free that. Wow.
Yes.
You guys are doing amazing work. Really amazing
work.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm so delighted that we got to have this time, and I know that the women in this course are just going to be really excited about this interview. I don't have an interview quite like this. I do have a few with Christiane Palmas that I will repost as well, because those are those are lovely. And I just hope that, you know, people I know now to really – I know more about your work now, so I can really help people find you and find the Women's Temple as well. And just keep adding to this – what I call the rise and integration of feminine and masculine consciousness, but really the really listening for what the feminine is asking of us. And I do believe that this root work has a lot to do with empowerment on all these other levels for us. So I think when we start to work with our root core issues, so much freedom can come from this, and not only freedom, but incredible fulfillment in life.
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, and thank you so much for inviting me into this conversation, and I've learned so much about Lalita, and I'm excited to practice the mantra.
Yes,
well.
Practice with it, and you'll see where it lands in the pelvic floor. It's pretty profound. We did a practice the other night, and you know, the women were like, oh, my gosh, like, I feel it. And it's really deep in the pelvic floor. So, yeah, maybe that can enhance your temple as well. So,
yeah, thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you so much. And much love to you. And we'll talk to you soon, I hope.
Okay. Thanks, Jeannie.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
Okay.
Be well. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.